Welcome to You Wanted a Hit, a podcast in which we discuss unlikely, perplexing, and positively bizarre songs that swept the nation and often the world. Hit songs that, looking back, make us think, how did this get played on the radio? Do people actually like this? Do we like this? Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm your co-host, Michael Smith, and I'll be discussing one song per episode with my co-host and fellow music fanatic, pop culture enthusiast Theo Beidler. Each episode, we'll take turns exploring the song, while the other host has no idea what song will be the focus until we hit play. Welcome to You Wanted a Hit. We have our first live guest. Live for me, virtual for Theo. We have Stanley Sievers. He is a comedian, writer, director, former hardcore band bass player.
Bald guy,
Big Dogs t-shirt wearer. He has a kick-ass TikTok everyone should check out, where he has shown off his Big Dogs wardrobe.
I got that sponsorship.
He's wearing it. I told him he had to wear this because he has reached Big Dogs influencer status, and they sent him a box of Big Dogs shirts.
I gotta say, I did not know that Big Dogs was still a thing, and I love the fact that it is. So, fuck yes,
dude, they're thriving.
Yeah, he's got Bone Cold Steve Austin on his shirt.
Now I want. Let's stop the podcast. I want to go online shopping here. I'm excited about this one. You said it's one of your favorites. So
I really like.
You said you really
song.
Liked it. I shouldn't say it's your favorite. Really, just depending song. On what you throw out next.
I'm not supposed to know what this is, right?
No, neither of you know what it is.
Stanley, you didn't prepare notes. Come on, man.
I asked earlier if I needed to prepare anything, and he said no. And I was like, okay. And now I was like, well, maybe he'll set me up.
This podcast is kind of a setup.
Could be.
All right. Here's the song we will be discussing tonight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Great song. It's a banger.
Stanley's shaking his head. Stanley, you look stressed out.
It's my least favorite kind of music.
Oh, wow. I wanted that to be an episode sometime where we play our least favorite song. Because mine is Hoobastank's The Reason. I don't know how the fuck that became popular, so we'll have to talk about it at some point. But Stanley, you don't like the song? This is a banger.
I just hate ska. I don't think I was born with, like, hatred for ska in my blood.
Is it running your family?
Yeah.
It's genetic.
It's a strong statement, but I can't imagine that you're the only one that has that strong statement.
He's like, my dad hated Madness. I hate the Boston's. My kid's going to hate whatever new ska bands there are.
There'll be something.
New ska bands? You think there's going to be new ska bands?
There's
100%, dude. 2030s. It's going to be a ska renaissance.
There's that one dude on Instagram, Skatoon Network, where he just does like ska covers of other songs and he plays every instrument. I see him all the time. People share him all the time.
God.
Sounds like Stanley's worst nightmare.
Who? What song was that? I know what it is, but...
Do you know who it is?
I wanted to say Hootie and the Blowfish, but I know it's not right at all. But it's not even the same genre, right?
My headphones just fell off my head. I was laughing so hard at that. It is also a long name.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Oh, Big D and the Kids Table? No. Oh, no. My God. Okay.
We're getting closer, I think.
Theo.
The Mighty Mighty Boston's.
Oh, my God. Okay.
The impression that I get.
Why is it the ska? Ska is a three-letter genre, and every band has to have at least 10 words in the name.
Actually, a great point.
What do you dislike more, ska or swing? Swing revival. Okay. Yeah. We should have given him the Cherry Poppin' Daddies episode.
I mean, they're all in the same vein.
They are. We'll get into that.
This song's from 1997 by Boston ska core band, the Mighty Mighty Boston.
Wait, did they call themselves that, or is that?
I don't know if they. Well, they pioneered ska core.
Sure.
I had a feeling this was going to be a good one. Well, before we get started, I just want to let everybody know that, of course, I'm drinking a fine India Pale Ale from our friends at Sierra Nevada, who have been very kind to us. Stanley doesn't drink beer, and I realized I should have bought the hard kombucha for him that Sierra Nevada makes, but I got a seltzer for my man.
I'm rocking a seltzer. I'm feeling good.
He said it's pretty good.
It is. It's good. Not as good as a Sierra India Pale Ale.
There you go. I was going to say, I think if you liked beer, that would probably be your favorite beer. I don't know how I feel, why definitely. I feel that way, but I sense it.
I don't even drink beer, and I think it might be my favorite.
Oh,
there you go.
And I like the best.
Could be a good ad campaign.
I also wanted to give a shout out to a new partner of ours, our Chicago friends. Stanley and I both used to live in Chicago. Dark Matter Coffee is going to be sending us some caffeinated elixir.
Whoa. Sure.
That code for coffee?
So I wanted to shout them out.
We got both ends of the spectrum now. We got the uppers and the downers in our liquids.
Either one of those. Well, the caffeinated elixir would send me to a panic attack, but beer, I could drink a beer before I would drink a caffeinated elixir, but that's just me for my mental health.
Wait, you don't like coffee, you don't like beer, you don't like ska? Come on, man.
Come on, man. Those are the big three.
Back to our friends, the Bosstones. They are from Boston, and hence the name of the band.
I never actually knew if they were from Boston. I'm glad to know that.
They're very Bostonian.
That would just be a very weird name.
Yeah.
I thought Boston, I always thought Bosstones was just like some sort of a ska like term, like a boss tone for like you're playing a sick ska riff and it's a boss tone or something. That's what I didn't really even put two and two together that it was Boston.
They had been a band since 1983. So it was a long con before they had a hit. They were paying dues for a really long time. Their debut album came out in 1989, and they were not a straight ska band. As I said, ska core. They brought in elements of 70s chugal metal.
This is the second genre I've heard of on this podcast, ska core and chugal metal, that are completely news to me. Anything related to Chugi?
Yeah, it's live, laugh, love metal. Live, laugh, love core.
Yeah.
I think Chugal, I think like kind of riffy, like 70s rock. So maybe that's what it is.
Whenever you think Chugal,
I've never thought Chugal.
I don't know what Chugal is.
I don't know. Keep on Chugling. People say that.
No one says that. How do you spell Chugal?
I've heard it. Chooggle.
Oh.
A lot of groans going on over here.
Yeah.
They also incorporated hardcore punk and funk into their...
Yeah, but they did.
So Chugal was coined by John Fogerty.
John Fogerty, I'm on board now.
Oh, see, that makes sense.
Yeah.
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 Right, it means to have a good time. Or a funky musical romp.
One of my favorite bands of all time, CCR.
Great choice.
And all the subsidiaries, Graham Nash, John Fogerty. Graham Nash is one of my favorite albums of all time. Okay. Songs for Beginners.
All right. Oh, I'm going to listen to that. I'll be Chuglin. So what was unique about the Bosstones versus other ska bands is that the lead singer, Dickie Barrett, he didn't have the nasally whine of most punk and ska bands. He had a rumbling Lemmy-esque growl, as it was called in a Stereo Gum article that I read, because he had spent his formative years in Boston's what was described as notoriously violent hardcore scene. Do you know anything about this, Stanley?
Boston is known for having a violent hardcore scene. I played some show. Well, I played some shows in Boston and they were violent. But I guess if you're going to go from hardcore to ska, I guess you could do it in Boston's the place. I don't know.
So we're talking about the notoriously violent shows and I'm just hearing in my head, bah, 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 bah.
Hey, we're paying the bills, right?
There is a Tampa Bay Times article in 1993 about the Bostones that said Barrett grates and grinds at every vocal turn with a nightmarish wail that has been compared to an upbeat Lemmy Kilmiser of Motorhead with a little Tom Waits and Jimmy Durante thrown in.
Is he writing his own descriptions of his voice? Who would come up with this? Who would describe it a voice as that?
Oh, just wait.
Wait, so two different publications compared him to Lemmy?
Two different publications use the term Lemmy-esque.
It goes on to say, they've been called the mutant spawn of Madness and Motorhead.
Dude.
Sounds like it's out of the press release.
Yeah. Somebody wrote an EPK with that in it, and they were like...
It was just a PK.
It was a PK. It wasn't an EPK, believe me.
The Boston's sound was much more punk influenced than the West Coast ska. So they were a little tougher.
Yeah. If you can believe that.
So the roots do lie in the hardcore punk scene, but clearly they're a ska band, largely influenced by the British two-tone ska scene of the 1970s. Let's talk about two-tone ska.
Wait, do we have time to listen to this guy's voice just for a second? Because I don't even remember what his voice sounds like.
You want to see if it's actually
Lemmy? Yeah, I want to see if it's Lemmy-esque mutant spawn. Sounds like Lemmy, man. Come on. Come on. I will say it is Lemmy-esque. It's hard to separate any element from ska away from the entire package. For me, so I hear it all, yeah, but the voice, I get it.
It actually, I never thought about it, but now hearing it back, yeah, I can see it.
I think that scream in that song is sweet before
okay,
the chorus.
I can move on now. I just needed to hear the voice okay. After the description.
So two-tone ska is a genre of British music that in the late 70s and early 80s used traditional Jamaican ska music with elements of punk rock and new wave. Its name derives from Two Tone Records, which was a label founded in 1979 by Jerry Dammers of The Specials.
The Specials are good.
It's ska, man. Are you allowed to say
The Specials
that?
Are ska?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of something. I'm thinking of 38 Special or something. This is a different band. No, they're not good.
So they were basically trying to transcend and diffuse racial tensions by mixing all these types of music together and featuring multiracial members in the band. Reggae is exploding in Jamaica. That's happened in the UK along with new wave. So like ska is kind of finding its way into new wave and punk. And that's starting to happen over here. And then essentially it ends up in Boston.
Sure. Yeah. That's all things do.
Yeah. The British always end up in Boston. Tearing shit up. So bassist Joe Gittleman played with a Boston hardcore band Gangrene.
What?
Did you know this band?
Yeah. This is crazy. I'm looking like a fool now.
Dickie Barrett, the singer, was a member of Impact Unit and then a band called Cheapskates.
Neither of those ring a bell, okay. But
he found his fame with Scott.
Yeah.
Some more Gangrene members are also in the Boston's, including Tim Johnny Vegas Burton on saxophone.
What did he do in Gangrene?
I don't know. and Ben Carr, who was actually a non-musician on stage presence for the Boston's.
Oh, the original hype man.
He just danced.
Okay.
So if you guys look up any Boston's performances, including like on TV, there's always just a guy dancing.
Do you think that like there was any sort of like resentment when they're like getting paid for a show early on and they're like splitting up the per diem or whatever? And
oh, well, he did a lot of other stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Vice actually ran an article in 2014 that I think it's just the headline is, "We interviewed the shit out of the Dancing Boston's guy." It says, "Skanking his ass off is his full-time job since the band formed in 1983. Ben continues to dance around stage and flail his arms, even though the band only plays about 10 shows a year." I guess at that point, they were really retiring from the ska game. But he also serves as the band's sort of tour manager, booking hotels and taking on most of the other tour duties for the whopping 8-member band.
Jeez, wait.
So their splits are still like...
Yeah. Splits are still not great.
So the group land on the name the Boston's, which was a reference to the city. And...
What? You're kidding.
I wrote this days ago. Some of the band members were influenced by bands such as AC/DC, Social Distortion, Motorhead, anybody?
Well, he is Lemmy-esque.
Stiff Little Fingers, but Dickie Barrett, the singer, was the one that was super into the two-tone ska stuff. So he's the one that kind of brought the ska into the core.
Wait, so you said that they had been doing it for a long time. They were a band since 1983?
Yeah.
When did they pop off?
This song came out in 97.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Nearly a decade.
The long con. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, dude. Did they have anything that moderately popped off before? Or, like,
yeah,
were they just big in the ska genre? And then this song sort of brought them, like, mainstream.
Yeah. Yep.
I see.
Yeah. So they...
So for all of you young bands just, out there, don't give up.
Yeah.
Spend 15 years grinding in a small, but shitty really, band. Though. Don't stop. You never know. You never know.
You never know when your weird niche genre is suddenly going to be popular.
I do feel like a lot of music is just whoever sticks around. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of bands, I think, are just like, if you stick around longer, if you're good and you stick around longer than the other bands that you started with,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
then you become tenured or whatever. But, like, at least I know a lot of hardcore bands, I'm like, oh, they just, like, stuck around. You know what I mean? Like, and then they're like, oh, they're like a, you know, they're like an older band in the genre or whatever. Like,
yeah, they're just the ones that liked truck stop food the most.
Yeah.
In 87, the Boston's made their recorded debut on the Mash It Up ska compilation.
Oh, okay.
They had two songs on there, and then they were on a couple more compilations, and then the real Boston's came knocking. There was an a cappella group in Boston called the Boston's, who had been using the name since the 50s.
That feels like an a cappella group's name.
These dudes have got to be...
I wouldn't know anything about that.
When you said they've been using the name since the 50s, I thought everyone in it's been alive since the 50s. Like, it's the original members, like, they're all like 100 at least, like, or whatever. I can't do
that. A bunch of geriatrics.
Like, they're like 100 years old, and they're like, you're not going to take our goddamn name.
Hey.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they're Boston dudes, though. They're probably going to beat the shit out of them.
A Boston a cappella group is scarier to me than, like, than a Boston ska band. And that, you have to do a cappella in Boston, you've got to be tough, I bet. You know what I mean? Like, you can't take any shit.
That's actually kind of true. I don't think it's come up before on this, has it? My past?
Your checkered past?
Did you do a cappella? I did a cappella.
You did? No fucking way.
I did. I did men's a cappella in high school.
So there really is a punk to a cappella pipeline, because I was.
There really
in it.
Is. I could only do the low notes, though.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't really. I would just do like the. We do like California Dreamin', and I'd be like, like that type of. I never like saying.
You were
like,
on pitch.
Yeah. Yeah. I was on pitch.
I remember it was in college, and we would go to like a cappella conventions and competitions and shit. And all the Boston groups were like hardcore, because college a cappella started in Boston. And it's like these groups from like MIT that are just like take it super seriously. They're very intense, matching outfits and shit. And we just show up like hungover doing like indie rock songs.
This sounds like ripe for a mockumentary a la like Best in Show.
That would be good.
I feel like that would be perfect for that. It really would be.
Wait, are the Bostonians, are they from a college?
Yeah, I think they're from Boston College.
Okay. Yeah.
So they were already just going by the name. They were just going by the Bostones.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. And then the original Bostones came.
They did. So they, to avoid any possible legal hassles with the a cappella group, they became the Mighty Mighty Bostones that we know and love.
Why not just the Mighty Bostones?
Yeah, one wasn't enough. One Mighty wasn't enough.
I don't know anything about how that came to be.
Brainstorm, probably.
Despite not having very many fans, as I read several times, the record label Tang, with two A's and an exclamation point, gave the band a recording contract, and they made the album Devil's Night Out.
Such a ska name.
I also read that the album was released to positive, local, and lukewarm national reviews.
Positive, local, which means like, yeah, I like those guys. They're cool.
Lukewarm national.
Yeah, lukewarm is worse than bad.
Yeah, it's like you would rather Pitchfork pan you than get like a six.
Yeah.
The band immediately found resistance from ska purists.
Oh, God.
They thought that they were not playing traditional ska, while hardcore fans hated that they were playing ska with hardcore and metal elements.
Could be a recipe for greatness.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about them today.
Yeah.
The band really started to gain fans when their trademark plaid clothing came into play.
Okay, they added the clothing and that's when it popped off.
After a show where Barrett wore plaid, fans started showing up wearing plaid.
Is this better or worse than wearing a band's t-shirt to see the band? Yeah. Nah, I'm here to see the plaid band.
Is there anything lamer than saying you're here to see the plaid band?
Yeah.
The band also started wearing Converse sneakers. And Converse came knocking.
They were like, stop.
And they became kind of brand ambassadors for
Look, we talked to the Bostones, the original Bostones, and they said,
stop wearing
shoes. They said, these guys are no good. You got to stop wearing our shoes. I feel like I'm being so negative on the Mighty Mighty Bostones, but actually, like, the person I am is like, whatever, good for them. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, you know what? People hated them and they fucking did their thing. Like, good for them. Yeah. I don't like, it's not my cup of tea, but
yeah,
you know what? They killed it.
I feel like with anything, you listen to a song enough times and you're like, actually kind of like it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's usually where we end up on this thing. We've definitely had a few where like, I don't know, man, this is weird. But for the most part, I feel like we're pretty, we've definitely like forced ourselves into submission with a lot of songs, where especially if you're doing the research, you're like, I hated this and now I kind of love this song.
It's like Baby Shark.
we're going to see Stanley. Stanley's 2 weeks from now is going to be rocking a plaid suit and we're going to be like, God damn it.
I'm going to see him going down the street skanking in Converse.
Bang, dang, dang, dang. What's up, man? Song's actually kind of ripped. It's Lemmy-esque, if you ask me.
So the band made one more indie album and then were approached by Mercury Records in 1993.
They had two albums on Tang?
Yeah. In an LA Times article in 1993, Joe Gittleman from Gangrene said, unfortunately, we've been put in a position where we had basically all quit our jobs and we're now trying to tour and we just simply weren't being paid for the records we were selling. In order for us to continue doing what we wanted to do, which was tour and make records and just be the Bostones, we had to go somewhere else. And that's why we signed to a major.
Mercury's the major.
Yeah.
I mean, what a circle jerk, though. You guys wanted to make money. Like, don't make it like a, well, look, it's the only way we could really keep touring. No, they threw a seven-figure check in front of you, and you said yes. Like,
well, there is a big S-word going on in the 90s in the punk scene.
Oh, yeah.
Sellout. It was like right when Green Day was like getting kicked out of the DIY spaces they played in because they signed a record deal, which in hindsight is really fucking dumb.
Yeah.
A little later, Real Big Fish, another ska band, had a hit single called Sellout. Was kind of making fun of that. Actually just read that book by Dan Ozzie, who used to write for Vice. It's called Sellout. Every chapter is like a punk band who signed a major label deal. What happened? And some of them, it worked out really well. And other ones, it was like, our old fans hate us. The new fans, we don't have any. We just like fucked ourselves.
Well, that's like, I feel like that happens a lot. I mean, first of all, most people don't understand that, like, if you sign to a major label, you're not like necessarily killing.
You owe them a lot of money.
I mean, like, you're getting, you owe them a lot of money. You owe them X number of albums, probably like at least three. And they send you money, and then you have to live on that and use that to record. And then they still get a cut. If it's like a 360 deal, they still get a cut of your merch, all that stuff. Like, you're not necessarily killing it, but it doesn't really guarantee much. I mean, I don't know. It helps you, like, obviously, but you're paying for it. You're paying for everything.
Yeah. And eventually there were bands that kind of put it as, especially the more like political bands, that were like, we're just using these suckers at the majors to infiltrate from within, which, like, kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
So the Bostones, the Mighty Mighty Bostones.
Let's not,
I guess I have to say the whole name.
Let's not get confused with the acapella group.
We're going to get sued.
They're going to be 200 years old by now. They're going to roll them out of, like, cryo chambers and up on your doorstep.
The band recorded an album for Mercury Records, and they had a single called Someday, I Suppose, and they made their first music video, and it received minor airplay on MTV. It was on 120 minutes and played from time to time, probably at like 3 a.m.
This is a long intro. This is the song before the song, right?
The video is great. And by great, I mean like really mediocre, very 90s. For a single, it takes 40 seconds for him to get into the actual singing.
This sounds like two different songs being played at the same time.
It was played late at night.
He's kind of got like a Bruce Springsteen vibe to his voice.
Yeah.
It sounds like the rest of them. It honestly sounds like the song we're talking about.
It really does, though.
I feel like I know this song. Or it just sounds like all the other ska. I think on the hit song, they really cleaned up his voice.
Yeah.
He does. I think he sounds like Tom Waits in this song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This seems like a better song than the other song to me. This is more enjoyable. It's more like just like rocky and like. I could see why people that were like ska purists.
Yeah. Just has horns.
Don't vibe with it because it's like. It's definitely like 50% ska.
Oh, yeah. The chorus is just like. Punk with horns, like slow punk with horns.
Yeah, weird.
Scott
Horn.
Well, the thing, they're obviously like horns, they're Scott elements, but a lot of like their guitar riffs are like pretty punk rock esque.
Yeah,
like the breakdowns there.
Yeah, just like power chords, basically.
I kind of like this song.
I did too, actually. I was like, okay, I'm like kind of vibing with this. Like, it definitely didn't seem like a single.
I don't know how that happened. But they coasted on the minor success of the album and recorded another album for Mercury. Still not the one we're talking about.
Wow. Is there a hit song from that album?
I don't know. I didn't listen to it.
Nothing of note. They really coasted on this album, then for another whole album they coasted.
We're going to come back to the album before it in a second.
Okay.
The band's fans were buying lots of vinyl, especially 7-inch singles, because that was popular in the punk scene at the time. And the band wanted to make vinyl, and the major label was like, nah, we're not going to do that. So the band made their own vanity label that would press their major label stuff. They'd like license it from the major label and press it onto vinyl. It was Big Rig Vinyl was the name of the label.
There's a lot of bands that do that still. It's pretty cool. It's a smart idea.
And then you get 100% of the margin except for like the license.
Yeah.
I guess they re-recorded an old song for this album that did okay. And it got them onto the Jon Stewart show, which was Jon Stewart's show on MTV before The Daily
Folks,
Show.
Folks!
Wow.
It's time to get out of your seats and into the pit. We've got the right band for it. Tonight! Making their national television debut, performing Kinder Words from their new album, Question the Answers. It's the Mighty Mighty Bostones.
Wow.
Wait,
this was like a talk show?
And he like had bands on and stuff.
Huh. I did not know that.
And then they hosted MTV's 120 Minutes. So the like alternative scene's starting to get on board. And then their big break, they performed in the film Clueless.
Did they?
And they played Someday, I Suppose, from the last album.
Wow, dude. Wait, that's why it sounds familiar, because I watched Clueless recently with my wife.
There we go.
Yeah. They performed in the movie Clueless.
Can I say? Yeah, at the frat party.
That's kind of sick. I kind of like when bands do that, like in Ace Ventura when Cannibal Corpse plays. Yeah. I'm like, that's pretty sick, dude. Like, they really are like, this is the band that at this time, and they are going to, like, we are betting on this band being the thing for yeah. a long time.
I love it. We're betting on Cannibal Corpse.
Yeah.
In a Jim Carrey movie.
Solid bet, though.
Yeah, totally. They're still around.
Still around.
They're still doing exactly what they've been doing the whole yeah. time.
I went to a Cannibal Corpse show in Chicago, and it was like when Megan and I first started dating, and she was a trooper for going with me to the Cannibal Corpse show. But all the other bands I liked first, and then Cannibal Corpse played, and like 10 minutes in, I was like, I think I'm good.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah. Megan was like, well, didn't you come to see this band? I was like, yeah, but I saw 10 minutes of it. I know what it's going to be.
That's how I felt when I saw Anthrax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys, they're playing Brooklyn Steel Cannibal this Corpse? Week. Yeah, you I gotta go to a Cannibal you Corpse show.
Dude, you gotta week. Go. What also helped their star rise was they were on the main stage at the 1995 Lollapalooza tour.
Wow.
At that point in time was an alternative rock tour. It wasn't Ariana Grande playing in Grant Park.
It was a tour. It wasn't just like a couple shows.
I think they would do like 15, 20 dates around the
for
country.
Lollapalooza?
Yeah, it was a full tour.
Yeah.
Wow. Originally.
And this was the year after Nirvana played it. And that was like a huge, wow. It was like Nirvana and Rage Against the Machine and shit like that. This lineup this year is insane. I can't believe it.
And they're still coasting off the old with that old album. When you said they coasted, that word is doing a lot of work in that sentence. They are now coasting for several years into Lollapalooza yeah. festivals, movies, yeah. off a song that takes a minute to hear a vocal. Yeah. Coasting is an understatement.
I'd say they were skanking on.
They were skanking on that song, yeah. dude.
The car is doing a lot of work. Wait, who was in the lineup with Lollapalooza?
Oh, you're gonna love this. This is right up your alley.
Oh, here we go.
We have Hole featuring Courtney Love.
Okay.
Cypress Hill.
Wow.
Fuck yeah.
Pavement.
Ooh. Interesting.
Sinead O'Connor.
Oh,
who it. Of course quit the tour halfway through.
In true Sinead fashion.
Well, she would always either quit or get kicked off of something. Elastica, who I love. Beck.
Wow.
Moby, your man, Theo, man. Your man, Moby.
We got to mention Moby at least once
every episode. Moby comes episode. He's just everywhere.
Really?
He's prolific.
He's got a really good archive of free music for people to use in like
I didn't know that.
And film and stuff.
I don't think I knew that either.
Yeah, he put up, he has like a free music archive on his site where you can use it. As long as you just like give credit, you can just use all these like all this music that he's either made or like, I don't know. A lot of it's just instrumental. Like, it's crazy.
Why isn't our podcast music Moby? Because then we could be like, and our theme song by Moby. Thanks, Moby.
There's a lot of like little stingers and like just stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, we're yeah. incorporating those into this episode. Every few words, it's going to be a Moby sound. We have Moby, Supertrunk, and Coolio.
The 90s were lit.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Oh, and I left out a heavy band, the Jesus Lizard. Ooh. Played as well. So
wow. Odd lineup.
Pretty rad lineup.
That's a wild fest.
Mighty Mighty Boss Tones are in there skanking yeah. while the Jesus Lizard is playing like across the field.
Cool. Wow. That's crazy.
All right. So we got all those things working for our guys.
They're primed.
MMB. They're getting there.
All they need is 10 more years.
So after that, they joined the inaugural Warped Tour.
The first Warped Tour. I remember them being a Warped Tour staple.
Yeah, band. Which yeah. they played for many years.
I'm pretty sure I went to a Warped Tour with where they was on it.
I think most people who live in America have been to a Warped Tour that yeah. the Boston's played.
If they played every year, then yeah.
What if they did the Warped Tour or Lollapalooza, one of these festivals, like all this rock music, and they booked the wrong Boston?
Wheel them out, baby. unfreeze them and wheel them out. Like fucking whatever Simon Matrix and Demolition Man, just unfreeze them, dude.
Captain America.
Yeah. Like Captain America, unfreeze them.
And now we've arrived at the Mighty Mighty Bosstones' third major label album, fifth album overall.
Wow.
Let's Face It.
Wait, that's the name of the album?
That's the name of the album. Oh, let's Face It.
Let's Face It.
Yeah, Let's Face It.
That's the name of the album. Okay.
We're at a time where like grunge had kind of taken over the rock airwaves and even pop airwaves. Things are super dark, but things are starting to go in another direction. And we're starting to see some ska bands that had some genuine ska cred get onto the charts. We got No Doubt, who had been a ska band since the mid-80s.
No Doubt was a ska band?
They were.
Wait, the same No Doubt that did, like, I must be thinking of...
Like Gwen Stefani?
They were a ska
band. They were a ska band.
I don't think I fully knew that.
Their first couple records are like straight up...
Wow.
Scott.
And Gwen Stefani.
There's definitely vibes of it, but I didn't realize that they were like,
no.
Yeah.
Well, think about like Spiderwebs. Like, that's essentially a ska song.
Wow.
Oh, their first couple records are like straight up fucking ska music with her singing it. Now she's married to Blake Shelton. And I don't know what else is
big
going
ska
on.
Big ska guy.
Yeah. Genuine ska crit.
People say that he is like the ska of country, you know?
How many times is he like, across at a part, like she's across at a party. He's like, "Hey, babe, what's that kind of music you played back in the day?"
Yeah,
ska, Blake. I told you so many times. I don't know, something weird had horns.
Yeah,
my girlfriend's a big scat artist.
Scat,
ska,
scat.
He's doing what Jonathan Davis does in Korn. Is that scat?
He's like, y'all know Korn? Yeah, she's in a Korn band.
Yeah. Same thing.
So we have No Doubt. We've got Sublime is on the scene doing some ska.
This Sublime is a ska?
They also started as very ska, and then they got more like reggae stoner shit later. Yeah. But they have some very straight up ska songs.
I feel like you're trying to force people into the ska bucket over here.
I don't think
you're
so.
You're picking major bands. NSYNC started the ska band. They were popping
songs.
I believe you. Because Beastie Boys used to be like a hardcore band.
They were.
So I'm like, okay, whatever.
So we're like paving the way for Bosstones to just come in and priming the pump.
They've been waiting in the wings for at least 45 years.
They're like, finally, it's happening.
We're still coasting off the one song, dude.
Hey, they made a bet and they went all in and they've been at the table all day, and finally at the end.
Yeah.
So on Let's Face It, the band kind of took down the punk hardcore metal influences a little bit, and it's way more ska and like pop punk power chords, and that, you know, that's kind of I think what made it happen for them. So pretty smart. I feel like they cleaned up his vocals a little bit in some of that, because you can actually understand what he's saying.
They definitely did.
This is their moment. They're here now.
Yeah, he no longer sounds like a guy at a Louisiana bar, like, like just muttering like that. Like, there's a big difference between that one song and then.
I think they also cranked like the gang vocals too in the band. They're like, we can't understand him.
Yeah.
Shout louder. We took a little break, got some beverages, and we played some early No Doubt and early Sublime for Stanley here. They're like very ska stuff.
Just geeking the fact that No Doubt was a ska band.
Stanley said he's really glad that No Doubt stopped doing ska.
Well, I'm sure No Doubt's happy as well.
And it's like, fine, ska. It just sounds like ska. Like if you played ska on like a copyright-free music site, like that's what it would sound like. Like, I just don't know how you get from that's what I heard to like, it's my life. I'm just a girl. Like those songs, like we just, on our break, I listened to a couple and was like, those songs rip. Like those songs are so good. And there's not a hint of ska in them at all.
It's post-ska.
Post-ska just seems to be good music.
What's interesting about the album, Let's Face It, is it's when they say it, it's actually racism, sexism, and bigotry. And the album is like largely about anti-racism.
Huh.
Wow.
Yeah. They also cover substance abuse, violence, mass media. It's kind of a Trojan horse of a pop record.
Wow.
And the song Let's Face It is specifically about anti-racism. And then they have this song, which is also considerably darker than it sounds, which is probably a ska theme.
Yeah.
The ska all kind of just sounds like cartoon music. And then they're all like punk dudes. So they're like singing about intense stuff.
It's like ska's got that real like Tasmanian devil running type vibe. Like
he kind of sounds like Tasmanian devil.
He does, yeah. Blah, blah, blah. He does.
Yeah. So more than a year before the release of Let's Face It, the album, the impression that I get, an early version appeared on Safe and Sound, a benefit in response to the Brookline Clinic violence, which was in response to the slayings of two abortion clinic workers in Boston in 1994. Wow. And the song, it's got that huge chorus. I've never had to knock on wood. I'm sure you're familiar with the, I guess it's an idiom.
Yeah.
Knocking on wood. Right?
Sure.
Yeah.
I looked into the roots of why, because I was wondering, I was like, why is that a thing? And I read that it's obviously a tradition of literally touching, tapping, or knocking on wood. And one does that in order to avoid tempting fate after making a favorable prediction or boast or a declaration concerning your own death or unfavorable situation. Its origin is in either Celtic or Germanic folklore, in which they believed supernatural beings lived in trees and could be invoked for protection. It's very pagan. It's like druid.
So you would knock on the tree to awake the spirits.
You'd knock on the tree so that the spirits come out and protect you after you just said something dumb.
Okay.
Basically.
Yeah. Oh, shit, I gotta hit this tree.
There are also wooden crucifixes that played into this. And there is a form of tag called Tiki Touchwood.
Mm.
Tiki Touchwood?
Tiki Touchwood.
Tiki Touchwood. Yeah.
It sounds like a druid porn star.
I was going to say, that sounds like...
So what is the significance of never having to knock on wood?
So it's interesting. He's not saying I've never had to knock on wood. It's I've never had to, comma, knock on wood.
Oh.
Which blew my mind, because I've always wondered, what the fuck is he talking about? I've never had to knock on wood, but I know someone who has. It's like,
yeah,
cool. But what the song is saying is that he hasn't had to face the pain or tragedy that other people have.
Knock on wood.
Whoa.
So he's like respecting people who have been through so much that he hasn't.
Wow.
Checking his privilege, if you will.
Yeah. I have to say, like, as much problems and stuff as there are in the punk scene and whatever, it has always been light years ahead of everything else. Like when it comes to stuff like that.
Growing up in the punk scene and playing in punk bands as a teenager, like I was really hyper aware of especially white supremacy because there were so many bands speaking out about it. And there were white supremacists showing up at fucking shows and like terrifying.
And then they get like kicked out. There would be like, gutter punk vegan dudes that'd be like, get the fuck out of here, like get this trash out.
They all looked like Moby, but they were kicking these dudes' asses.
Yeah, they'd like kick out these like skinhead dudes.
Yeah,
like, I remember distinctly going to shows and there being like a group of three skinheads that would show up randomly and people would just like, all the vegan straight edge people would be like, get the fuck out of here, and like run them out of the show.
I mean, we'd be loading out and like loading our gear out of a venue and the skinheads show up and you're like, pack it up, get out of here, because these guys are going to give us trouble.
Yeah.
And then later on, like 2016 rolls around and we're all talking about white supremacy because it's like in the headlines every day. And I'm like, it's been there.
It has been there. And I remember like not only like white supremacy stuff, but like words like the F slur for like, you know, LGBTQ people. Like, I remember that being, like, I was hyper aware of that word being a slur before, like, whenever, like, everyone in high school was just
using
like,
it, just flipping,
dropping it like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, I don't know. It was always a little bit more forward thinking.
I found out about so many causes that I still support or I'm aware of because I was like reading liner notes and albums. They were like, we're donating 2% of whatever. 2% of whatever we're not paying our dancing tour manager to charity.
Well, like the thing about punk was like, okay, I'll go to the show and then I'll see some zines, like some dude with like a mohawk and like a bunch of tattoos would be like, here's all these zines. And you're like, oh, cool. This one talks about like blowing up like factories. It's like, I'm not down with that, but I'll read it and check it out. And you can like, you'll get exposed to all these different things. And you're like, well, that's super extreme, but I do enjoy like this, this, and this. So maybe I'll think about that mm-hmm. in returns to like being vegan or vegetarian or eating less meat or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It's like that stuff was, that scene was always very like forward thinking.
It was mostly white dudes doing and saying all this stuff, but it was, yeah. It was, I don't know. I mean, maybe that was a way that they were able to reach people.
Yeah.
So the Boston's actually had the Mighty Mighty Boston's. They had, I think it, every show from what I read would have a local anti-racist charity or organization have a booth at the show. It's like that was their thing for a long time.
That's rad.
See, this is what happened. Stanley, now you're like, actually, the yeah, Mighty Mighty Boss, they're kind of cool.
You know, they're winning me over as a band. The music, I don't think I'll listen to, but they're winning me over as a band.
So back to the song, there's a few stories that I read of why he was singing about this, you know, a deceptively upbeat song that actually has very serious lyrics. And the most common description is that he went to a funeral for the brother of a friend and was just like counting his blessings because his friend died young and that he hasn't had to deal with that. His life has been, it's been coasted, been coasting.
Been coasting.
Yeah. He's been coasting on that single.
Skanking on that single. For,
yeah. He was like, oh man, I've never had to. Knock on wood. And then there's the song. And the beginning of the song, it's like, have you ever been close to tragedy? But I always just ignored everything because I was like, hasn't he knocked on wood? And he knows one person that has? Like, we say this all the time. This is so weird.
And it sounds like he's saying, I've never had to knock on wood, but I know someone.
It's not much of a break
there. No.
But as he's leading up in the pre-chorus, he's like, all these things have these people. And he's like, well, I've never had to knock on wood. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also wonder if in the CD, I did own this CD.
You did?
I did. I wonder if in the lyrics, there's a little comma.
Yeah.
So that's what the song's about. And clearly it's just like a peppy ska sounding song with power chords in the chorus. I just couldn't figure out why it got so big.
Yeah.
A lot of times like we found like somebody was just like, this is, we're going for it.
Somebody this. Played
or,
it.
Or it was, yeah. Or all kinds of, a lot of times like in several episodes, like a radio station just starts playing it like crazy. And back then, like some of the big stations, that's how songs got huge. Just like spreads like wildfire uh-huh. and that. Or we had some internet songs in the more recent years. This was just ska was hot. The song was a jam. But when you listen to the song, it's like
it is a jam. It comes in it real does. Hot right away. It's catchy. It grabs you right away.
Yeah. Wait, so how let me yeah. let's can we listen to this song again real yeah. quick? Yeah. At least the first little bit. Because yeah. I need to, because I've been thinking about.
Should we watch the video as well?
Actually, let's
watch the video.
Let's watch the video. There's not a lot out there about the video. I found the director's name, but that was pretty much it. There's like no real stories. Because the video is just like a recreation of the album cover.
Also, I have it pulled up here. Can we talk about why they have the S capitalized at the end of Tones?
I don't know. I Mighty, think it's Mighty just Boss some Tones. Cheeky 90s shit. Yeah, you know, people are starting to play around with okay. punctuation. Shit was getting wild.
The first comment here is, someone once described ska as the music that plays in a 12-year-old's head when mom brings home pizza.
Wait, they just broke up.
They did. That's 3 why we're ago, talking they, about this.
Oh, up. I remember hearing this, yeah. Oh, we'll have to get to that in a bit here.
Okay.
We didn't really talk about it. They are a diverse band. They're not only preaching anti-racism, but they've got all kinds of folks in the band.
Walking the walk.
Walking the walk.
I mean, when those horns come in, you got the little drum beat, it's kind of a banger.
I get it. I just remember even when it was out, I was like, what the hell is he talking about? This chorus is like, people are like chanting along. I've never had a knock on wood. Yeah, man. Like, I don't know why that resonated with people.
This video is wild.
It's super 90s.
It's something for sure. This is not what the guy singing, that's not what I thought he looked like. The singer, like, I feel like I imagine him to be more Lemmy-esque. Maybe, I don't know. They are playing like a hardcore
band. They got earrings.
Their shows were known to be crazy. Like, I think they really riled people up, and from what I understand, they were quite intense and violent for ska shows.
It's it. It's like snowing now.
Oh, there's this whole part where he's jumping inside their mouths. I don't know if I've gotten this far in this video.
Yeah, I just exited it out.
Oh, you guys can see that there's the dancing guy. You'll see him just kind of
doing. Oh, he's doing it.
They're jumping moves out of the mouth. Why? This is weird.
It's interesting that we don't know, that you don't can't find why it got so big. Like, it just.
I was searching, like, how did the Boston's get famous? And I was like, how did the impression that I get so huge? Because, like, they had minor hits before this, but this song was fucking everywhere. It's kind of still is.
Yeah. Oh, it's everywhere.
I hear this song all the time.
Yeah. They're still coasting on this one.
And I think that's another thing, too, is I was like, this song was like the most ska of the quote ska hits.
This is like one of the songs that I think about when I think about ska.
Yeah.
Like when you played that, I was like, I didn't think Mighty Mighty Boston's. I thought this is ska.
You thought Tony Hawk's Pro
Skater. Yeah. I did thought Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
They're both. But when we talked about the swing scene and we referenced a lot of these bands, they're in the same vein. I remember I think we touched on the Boston's. And I was surprised that they came so many years later than the whole scene. Like, looking back, I put them in the same realm, but it was a good 4 years after, 3 years after.
Yeah, I feel like the ska hits that happened before it, like we're talking like No Doubt, like Spiderwebs, were like, it's kind of ska. And like Sublime's a little more reggae than ska. And then this, they're just like, we're doing it. We're skawing the shit out of this song. That's going to be huge. And then after this, I feel like there weren't a lot of ska hits. And what, it turned into swing revival, I guess?
Good. Was that their last album on Mercury?
No, they had one or two more. And then went back to the indie route. Coasting on Impression That I Get.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you got to hear the voice within 10 seconds. They figured that out.
Yeah.
For a single. Honestly, the fact that that other song did as well as it did with that long of an intro is more impressive.
It's more unlikely.
Hardcore to ska pipeline, hardcore to zoot suit pipeline must have been the original hardcore to pop punk pipeline.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because now it's like bands will be in hardcore bands and then they're like, well, let's.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they do a pop punk band, and then they make country.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hardcore to hardcore. Then you have three branches. You can go ska, zoot suit, or pop punk. And then from there, you can go. Yep. There's no, if you go zoot suit or ska, there's no more branches after that. But pop punk leads you to either country or singer songwriter. I'm doing. A tour on my own in my Camry.
Yeah.
Yeah. My guarantee is $750 a night.
But I've got a dancing guy.
Yeah. But I've got a dancing guy.
So this song, after it came out, was in a ton of TV shows and movies. It was in Friends, which is like the pinnacle of 90s. I feel like you got a song in Friends.
That's impressive.
I mean, Cannibal Corpse had a song in Friends.
No. Are you serious?
Just imagining how that would play out.
It would be like Joey goes to one metal show and now he's like super into it.
Yeah.
And he comes in wearing like all this metal shit.
Yeah.
He's like, guys, I've been at this metal show.
And Chandler secretly has been like metal for a long time. He thinks Joey's a poser or whatever.
And Ross is like, I like metal too. And he plays like the wimpiest shit. They're making fun of him. This song was also in another 90s hit, Chasing Amy.
Oh.
And I read that one of the articles that I read in one of the numerous publications that have done like retrospective pieces about the Boss Tones, they said that Chasing Amy came out, I think, in 98. And this song was already so ubiquitous that the crowd did an audible groan when the song came on.
The crowd at the movie theater.
Yeah.
Oh. Song came on. Oh, come on.
It's also in Step Brothers. It's in Father's Day. It's in Krippendorf's Tribe. Do you guys remember this movie?
No.
I don't remember exactly what it's about, but I think Richard Dreyfuss is like a psychologist. He always plays a psychologist. And he like immerses himself into like a native tribe. Probably hasn't aged as well as Chasing Amy.
I bet you this song plays in the montage part where he's like becoming part of the tribe or whatever. Like, and he's like learning how to do all the shit. And,
he's learning how to skank.
Yeah, he's learning how to skank. And
It's also in several of the Rock Band video games. You can play it in the game if you want to be a boss tone at home. I don't know if they have a channel for the dancing guy, but
they have it on DDR.
Oh, there was Dance Dance Revolution. So. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I didn't find any covers of this song, which is weird. So weird.
That is strange.
Nobody notable has covered this song. Any. There's not a Kidz Bop. There's nothing.
Not even a Kidz Bop?
Probably because Kidz Bop was like, this sounds fun. It's about death.
Yeah, we're good.
No samples, no covers. Usually we have like more than we can talk about.
That's wild.
And we're like, holy shit, I can't believe that one rap song like sampled the Spin
Everyone
Doctors.
Heard that song once and they're like, okay. Yeah, I got it.
They saw Chasing Amy and they were like, well, jump the shark.
Jump the shark. Yep.
Yeah, on one hand, it could be like, wow, they did it so well that we could never replicate it. But I think in this scenario, it was like,
we're good. I feel like this song is in the same, has the same sort of energy as the Dropkick Murphys song.
Boston.
Like, energy is then, like, you've heard it, and you're like, when it comes on, you're like, ugh.
Yep.
I don't know the name of the song, but, like, I just know the Dropkick Murphys song, whatever, like.
What's the Scorsese movie it's in?
Departed.
I get them and Flog and Molly confused.
That makes sense. When did the Celtic punk come in? Was that after
it feels Scott very explosion? Similar. Like that Celtic punk seems.
We've done everything we can with punk.
Right.
And then after the ska, the swing, this Celtic
shit. Isn't Rancid sort of, don't they have some sort of like ska something?
You know what just came to mind? I forgot about Time Bomb. That was a big ska hit.
Time Bomb
maybe
was
not
a
as
ska.
Big as this. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is I like Time Bomb. I like Rancid.
Yeah.
But.
Well, Flog and Molly formed in 1997. And the Dropkick Murphys formed in 1996.
Okay. Oh, we're. Yeah. This is all happening.
This is
at
all
the same
making
time.
Sense now.
It is. Is Flog and Molly from Boston too?
So right,
of course.
Wait. So when did people start groaning? You said Chasing Amy. When did they groan at this 98. Song? 98.
Yeah.
So it had already been the trend. It is already over. So we already have new bands starting similar type of punk offshoot, Celtic punk, Flogging Molly.
Oh, the Dropkick Murphys were on Tang.
Oh,
they were on Tang.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. This
tracks.
Oh wait, Flog and Molly was formed in Los Angeles. But some of the members are from Dublin, which you'd imagine.
Okay. All right. Some of them are from, okay. Maybe we're not co-op.
Foggy Molly is ska?
They're Celtic.
Celtic punk.
They're like more Celtic than Dropkick Murphys. It's like bagpipes and shit. What?
The bagpipe in a punk song is the exact same thing as a horn in a punk song. That's like, it just feels, Celtic punk and ska feels like they just switched a couple instruments.
Man, bagpipes were having a moment because Korn was starting to get big. Korn was
heavy on the bagpipes for multiple albums.
They dropped it eventually when they were on MTV. MTV was like, we're already playing Flogging Molly videos. We can't have a bagpipe.
They dropped it in favor of like,
start scatting. They traded out bagpipes for jazz.
And that came out in, that was 98.
There's a big bagpipes moment happening. Not in the only late in 90s. Punk, I like, but we don't talk about
metal.
Yeah. It's so weird.
People heard horns and they're like, they did horns. We can do bagpipes.
As you noticed in the music video, they were not wearing plaid. They're wearing black suits. So they end up dropping the plaid when the album came out.
That seems like a big risk for them.
It does. It seems like.
Because as we remember, they only got big when they started wearing plaid.
Yeah. So it was a big thing. They felt like it like turned too much into a thing. Like the plaid was overshadowing the music.
Oh. People go to shows just for the plaid, not for the music.
And then this album, they get even more revolutionary here. So wearing black suits.
This is
no almost, bands have ever worn black suits before.
This is like Zoot Suit territory. They're a Zoot Suit adjacent with just the black suits.
Right.
They went Men in Black.
Right.
I was about to look
97.
That up.
97.
Yeah.
This feels like, it kind of feels like a conspiracy podcast. 97.
Yeah.
Black suits, Men in Black.
Yeah. Look. Next guest is going to be Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Let's talk about charting. How big?
Charting?
charting.
Charting. Okay.
Well, 97, like, charting got huge. Wow,
you guys are really making a hard right turn here.
Let's get some guesses on the Hot 100 here.
Number 3.
I was going to say number 2. I don't know.
Our Boston brethren got to number 19 on the Billboard Hot 100.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Really? This song was everywhere.
What did they get beat by?
Oh, let's talk about that. It also charted in the top 10 in Australia, Canada, and the UK. So it got bigger in other countries than it did in the United States. It was the number one modern rock song for weeks. So this was number 19 at its peak. Number 18, Smash Mouth, Walking on the Sun.
Oh, man.
Fucking hate that band.
Which is crazy because Smash Mouth started as a punk and ska band.
Bro.
And then turned into like a, what are they like? Lounge new metal, like I don't really know.
Yeah.
Well, now they're like Hail Hitler, all sorts of issues. We'll get to them at some point.
Number 17, Sarah McLachlan, Building a Mystery.
Oh, great song.
Is this his Lilith Fair time?
Uh-huh.
Number 16, one we will definitely discuss. OMC's How Bizarre.
Oh, I mean, that was gonna be the title of the podcast.
Oh, wait. How Bizarre. That is beyond ska. That is one of my least favorite songs of all time.
Other than every ska song ever, How Bizarre, it's your least favorite song.
Is my one of my least favorite songs of all time.
What is it about that? We're going to have you back for the OMC episode.
Yeah.
Well, it just reminds me of like, I would work at Jimmy John's and work with all these like people that are like Fish, Sublime heads, like, and then they're like, How Bizarre. Like,
wait. I didn't know that How Bizarre was a big like jam band song.
It's like the same. It's like the, I feel like the same fan, like Venn diagram was like How Bizarre. Like, it's like the people that are just like, whoa, like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, How Bizarre. Like, I don't know, man. Is it really bizarre?
I guess I didn't know that there were like people that were super into How Bizarre and they were also like
somebody
people.
Had to have been, right?
Yeah. Dude, yeah. I think it's the same Venn. I don't know this for sure, but I think it's this, like a middle Venn diagram territory.
Interesting. Yeah. Did the song play at Jimmy John's a lot? Okay.
Yeah. Well, because what happens when we would work, like one person would just play their music for a long time and then like it would be like This was before Jimmy John's became corporate. Like
I was going to say, Jimmy John's let you play your own music?
Well, so I worked at a franchise, and it was like lawless when I worked there. We would play like Cannibal Corpse and stuff. Like when, you know, people were drunk, people were coming in, and we'd want them to leave. We'd play Cannibal Corpse.
You're playing Cannibal Corpse at Jimmy John's.
100%.
This is amazing.
Yeah. OMC was on Mercury at this time. So...
Oh man, Mercury!
Well,
I mean,
conspiracy. Were they keeping the Boston's down?
Yeah,
they were pumping How Bizarre.
Ooh. Well, yeah, they had the How Bizarre out at the same time as the Boston's.
15, a song I don't remember. Invisible Man by 98 Degrees.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I know who they are.
I remember that one.
I really want to talk about what's at number 8 because it's been covered.
Jumping ahead
on the show, and that's our most popular episode.
Tub Thumping?
Chumbawamba, Tub
Thumping. Wow.
Yeah. Was that number 8?
There's a lot of...
So we've got the ska hardcore band at number 19. And then you get up there, we've got the anarchist punk band at number 8. Like, shit's crazy right now.
What's the top 10?
I don't know the top 10, but I know number 1.
Which was?
Sugar Ray Fly.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Wow, man. What was that? What did that song sound like?
I just want to fly.
Oh, dude.
What a fucking weird time of music.
With like record scratches.
Oh, man. I thought it might be that song. That song is like brings back weird memories.
Is that Jimmy John's?
No. Basically, what happened with that song is like, I don't know if you remember, it was in all these Jeep commercials. But I remember when I was young, when that song came out, I had been at my friend's house, my friend Justin's house, and his older brother showed us softcore like pornography for the first time. And I felt so guilty about it. I didn't tell my parents. And that song was playing in the background on a radio in the basement that we were in. And every time that song came on the radio, it's my parents, I started crying because I felt so guilty. And eventually I was like, Justin's brother showed us this and I gotta be honest about this. And dude, and my parents cared so little. I carried around for like a month this guilt. And it was like the first instance of me carrying around a massive guilt. Like, you know that feeling?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That is what that Sugar Ray Fly song brings up.
I love that porn and Mark McGrath are in the same playfield for you.
Wow. That is not where I thought that was going.
No, dude. That is like damn, a poor childhood memory for me.
Well, we might have been better off if Impression That I Get was the number 1 song, because that might have been playing. Would have played the song and you'd been like, no! Rip your headphones off.
Yeah.
I'm calling my mom.
I think it charted pretty high considering all the other songs on there.
And it's fucking ska.
Yeah. The fact that ska would crack the top 20 on with like Smash Mouth, Sugar Ray, whatever.
Those other ska songs I mentioned, the ones that are straight up ska that were like somewhat popular, did not get this hot.
No.
Like this was, the album went platinum within a year. And the album itself was number 27 on the Billboard top albums.
Wow.
So like, and we're in like the era of like Will Smith, Mariah Carey, boy bands, like, and Mighty Mighty Boston's are number 27.
That's crazy.
That's why I'm surprised it only went to 19.
Yeah.
Because the song was everywhere.
It was. And
that's why I guess number 2, because I'm like, this song still is everywhere.
Yep. But we were also all probably listening to modern rock, alternative rock radio, and it was number 1 for weeks.
Yeah.
The band played Saturday Night Live on this album with the dancing guy on SNL. They played all the late night shows. That same article that was in Stereogum, the guy who wrote it, Tom Brahan, who we've talked about before on the show, because Stereogum just writes really great like retrospective pieces, so it's just on here a lot. They do a lot of the work for us. One day I'll thank them. The Boston's were like a super hard touring band, which makes sense why they only did 10 shows a year for the last 5-10 years. And this guy said that he saw them in 97. He was like, you couldn't escape the Boston's. They were just everywhere.
Well, if you said they did Warped Tour every single year,
yeah,
that alone is a lot.
Yeah. So they... he said he saw them play a radio station festival in a football stadium. So also, they used to do radio station festivals in football stadiums. So let's think about that. And I want to know what other bands were on that. OMC, probably. Sugar Ray.
Yep.
And then he saw them in the same stadium at Warped Tour in the same summer.
Oh my gosh.
Dang.
What's crazy is there's the fact that they have no non-competes in their contracts, they could just do all these massive festivals like
two months
after each other. It's crazy. I feel like that was before non-competes would have been. Like,
they're like, you want the ska?
Yeah.
You must do everyone.
I feel like that's crazy because you would not be. I feel like now, maybe I don't know, but the bands could not do that. Play like a massive festival and then another massive festival in the same city 2 months later. No,
definitely not. There's no way. This guy also said that he had tickets to see them at a Baltimore frat bar. I don't know which one. I'll have to ask Jamie which one. The openers were the Bouncing Souls and the Pie Tasters.
Bouncing Souls.
That's cool. Yeah. And he said, but it snowed that night and his parents wouldn't let him drive the car. So he missed the show. He would have seen Boston's a third time in 97. He then went on to say that he felt that radio-driven ska petered out and died a humiliating death at the hands of nu metal.
Oh, dude. It must have strangled it out because nu metal took over.
Oh, yeah.
Which is wild to think because nu metal is almost even more of like a hard right curve than like ska is to me. Like the fact that nu metal became huge blows my mind.
But I think like we talked about, like there were the Korns of the world, like slowly turning that ship, and then it just opened the floodgates for fucking Limp Bizkit and whatnot.
I did read that this kind of boiled down to the same thing that book I read, Sell Out by Dan Ozzie, made the point in the beginning of the book, in the prologue, is like Nirvana got huge, and that was the first time a major label was like, we're gonna give this heavy punk band a bunch of fucking money, and it worked. So they just were trying to sign every punk band. Like they had like A&R dudes at like the shittiest DIY spaces, like looking for bands. And a lot of the bands said no. And then some of them did. Mm-hmm. And they were just like, and that makes sense because it was Boston's signed in 93 to Mercury. So I feel like they were like, all right, grunge is happening. Green Day's doing pop punk. What's next?
It's ska. Yeah.
Plaid driven rock. Let's go.
Plaid driven rock. Yeah. Well, I feel like what happens a lot of times is labels will be like ska, and then like one label has the ska band, then the other every other label's like, we gotta have our ska band.
100%.
Yeah.
And then
like,
they're like, okay,
RCA was like, we got Less Than Jake.
We gotta get Less Than Jake. And then like that's why I don't know, maybe that's why all these bands like were just ska, like major label ska all the time, because like boom, whatever the first band was, maybe Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, I don't know. And then all these other bands, like all the labels are like ska, 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 ska. And then these bands are like, wait, well, I think we just want to do something else, actually.
So when I was a kid, I was in fourth grade and my parents were both working, and my mom had her friend she worked with, her little brother, would watch me after school. And this guy smelled really bad. Probably drove a Camry. It was a piece of shit. It was really bad. And I would like, he'd like watch me after school, quote, but he would just like watch South Park in our den while I just like hung out at the house doing whatever I wanted. And then we would like go out with his friends and they would be like pulling each other on rollerblades with their car. Like it was like, it was like not very good babysitting. He was fine. It wasn't crazy.
Yeah.
He wasn't letting me do it. Like I'd be like, yo, can I do this? He's like, no, no way.
Yeah.
You watch us do it. I don't remember his name. Jimmy? I think his name was Jimmy. Short-lived. We would get in his car, and he only had three CDs that we would hear all the time. It was Korn.
Yes.
ICP.
Yeah.
And Real Big Fish.
Dude. Honestly, ICP is kind of a wild card in there, a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess ICP was huge at the time.
He wasn't a juggalo. It was just that ICP was huge. Like Insane Clown Posse had like just blown up into the, I remember the CD was a purple case and it had the like jester. It was like very menacing. I was in fourth grade. I was like, this shit's fucking scary. And these guys are like talking about crazy shit. I don't even know what this is. And then Real Big Fish would come on and be like, oh, sweet. Hell yeah. We got some horns. That was my introduction to ska, was sandwiched between Korn and ICP.
Wait, how old are you? Because I got into nu metal hard. Because I feel like maybe I missed, maybe age, I just missed the ska train by like a few years.
Yeah, you might have.
Your life would have been a lot different.
Yeah. Because I did, because nu metal was like my introduction to everything. I was like Disturbed, Korn, freaking, you name it.
POD.
POD, yeah. Everything. I got into nu metal, but I completely missed the ska train. Maybe that's why I don't like ska.
No covers, no samples, not much else about this song.
No Weird
it
Al.
It just kind of happened. It was just no Weird Al parody. We usually have
Weird Al parody?
Yeah, we usually have a Weird Al 90s. Parody. Yeah.
I don't think there's enough like in this song to like lock on to. Like, there's, it's just kind of the same refrain over and over again.
So where are the Boss Tones now? Stanley gave us a little update earlier. The Boss Tones just broke up after almost 40 years being a band.
Wow.
And after 10 years of everyone thinking that they had already broken up.
At least.
Yeah.
I would think that if they played, if they went on tour now, they'd probably play like theaters.
Yeah.
I feel like there's enough. You don't think so?
I just don't know. There's obviously there is a fan base that's still there that would still come out, but like in droves, I don't know.
They stuck it out a few more years on the major label. They released one more.
And only one more album?
Only one more, and it didn't. Yeah. They released Pay Attention was the name of the album, which is funny.
And no one did.
Pay Attention. We're gone.
Yep. But it was also because that's around the time of Napster and the major labels started to collapse and they were like eating each other up. And Mercury and PolyGram became part of Universal Music. And then they merged with Island and Def Jam. And the band just felt like they didn't have a place. That's their side. I think we didn't have another impression that I get. Dickie Barrett moved to Los Angeles and he became an alt-rock radio DJ on the radio. Huh. And then you guys have probably heard his voice many times on the television. He is the announcer on Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Whoa!
And has been the whole time. Jimmy Kimmel's a huge Mighty Mighty Boss Tones fan.
That checks out.
It totally does. He seems like a ska guy.
Jimmy Kimmel is a ska guy. He is like the poster boy for ska.
Yeah.
You can't, it's a podcast. You can't see what I'm doing, but I'm doing
he's Jimmy Kimmel-esque dance. As Jimmy Kimmel. It's like The Man Show had some ska in it.
Yes, The Man Show is
I feel like it's,
The Man it was, Show is a very ska.
The girls like, jumping on trampolines to ska.
Yeah, is very like. First of all, The Man Show is. The fact that that was a show like is so funny. Like
twice, and the second one was a Joe Rogan.
The second one was Joe Rogan.
Yeah,
yeah. That.
Dickie Barrett has been the announcer ever since. He's still the announcer.
That's crazy.
And Jimmy Kimmel has returned the favor by sometimes playing bass clarinet in the Boss Tones.
Wow. What?
Yeah.
That's wild.
You can find it on YouTube. Jimmy Kimmel playing with the Boss Tones.
That's amazing.
That is wild.
Big ska guy. The Boss Tones took a break in the 2000s, got back together. I guess that was about 2 weeks ago.
Pay attention.
Why did they hang it up? Do we know?
We don't know. They posted on their website, after decades of brotherhood, touring the world, and making great records together, we have decided not to continue on as a band. Above all, we want to express our sincere gratitude to every single one of you who supported us. We could not have done it without any of you. Love always, the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, capital T, capital S.
Wow. Not to be confused with the Boss
Tones. That's it. That's all I have, fellas.
Perfect. Great episode.
Great episode. I think great song. We all agree, great band. Cool band.
Yeah.
Cool band. Good band.
Change my opinion on the band. Don't like the music, but I like the band now.
We've also had the opposite, where people come in liking the song. By the end of the episode, they're like, fuck this band. This sucks. Stanley, thanks for being here in the flesh with us. It was fun.
Great time.
I hope, Theo, you had fun too.
Great time.
You're in New York.
Great time. And, I hope all of our listeners had fun as well.
Yeah, I think so too. Stanley, you have anything to plug?
Made a short film called Samurai Sword. You can watch online. It's about a guy who buys a cursed sword and kind of ruins his life. But you can find it online on YouTube or Vimeo or just on my site, stanleyws.com. Check it out. Put a lot of work into it. And it's 20 minutes long. So
commitment is low.
Yeah. Commitment
it's like, is low. It's like a ska album.
Yeah. So I get it. But, you know, I like it. And I hope you might like it too.
Stanley, what's your TikTok handle?
At Stanley WS.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of your TikTok. I don't really use TikTok for anything other than following a few people on there. And you're one of them. Cause
yeah,
I really love the former hardcore guy one.
Those oh yeah. I need to do that.
The hometown hardcore guy are very funny. I'm a huge fan. Thanks.
Thank you.
And let's face it.
That's a wrap on this episode of You Wanted a Hit. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Good luck getting that song out of your head. Please remember to subscribe so you know when the next episode is out. And if you listen on Apple, write a review, but only if it's nice. Follow us on Twitter at YWAHpod and let us know what you think. Or tell us what we missed by sending us an email at YWAHpod@gmail.com. And lastly, share with a friend if you had a good time. This podcast was researched, produced, recorded, and edited by me and Theo Beidler. And our theme music is by Air Doctor. We'll see you next time.